Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me, and this is the SmackDown Live review for the show that aired last night, and a lot to talk about there, for sure, with the return of Brock Lesnar, which I absolutely effing loved, by the way. I have a very, very passionate feel about that, and, of course, Daniel Bryan and his apparent babyface turn again, we'll have to see, but, and more important than any of that, are those of you who are watching me via video, and that is exclusive right now to patreon.com/WWE podcast. So if you would like to get a view of me while I record these shows, well, this is exactly where you do it, on patreon.com/WWE podcast. And so thank you to everybody out there who's watching, and I hope you enjoy the video. I don't know if you will or not, but it certainly is a different way to watch and listen to the show at the same time. So everybody, thank you again for being a patron. Those of you that have signed up lately, I do see and notice, and thank you. And those of you that have subscribed, I do appreciate you as well. I know that many of you are longtime listeners of the show, and I appreciate that. And, of course, new listeners on board, whether you love me, hate me, I'm here to stay. And so anyway, guys, let's jump into SmackDown Live, because I loved it. I loved not certainly all of it. But what I loved was seeing Kofi Kingston get his ass F5'd by Brock Lesnar. I absolutely loved it. I thought it felt so good in my soul. It felt good to my soul to see Brock Lesnar back. I don't care if the crowd booed him. He is no longer the man that holds the Universal Championship hostage. He is no longer the man that I wish would go away and just go back to UFC. Brock Lesnar is no longer the man that I am bored by. Brock Lesnar has found a home on SmackDown Live. End of story. Brock Lesnar is reinvigorated, with a new home on SmackDown Live, with a new beard. He's grown his hair out a little bit on top, and it just has all refreshed the Brock Lesnar package, on top of giving him a new opponent in Kofi Kingston. And y'all know how I feel about Kofi Kingston. So it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful to see Kofi Kingston get dropped by Brock Lesnar. It felt, and it was just so obvious and startling to see Brock Lesnar against Kofi Kingston. Brock Lesnar outclassed him. Brock Lesnar made him feel exactly the way I have felt about him since he became champion. You don't belong in my world. Because Kofi Kingston doesn't. So without going down that road again, I promise I won't. If you want to hear how I truly feel about Kofi Kingston, listen to my last show. Or really the show before that. I'm sure that I went off the rails on it before. But as far as Brock Lesnar goes, fresh opponent, fresh look, fresh home. You had the recipe for a successful run with Brock. Again, I don't know how long Brock Lesnar will be there. Brock Lesnar tends to come and go, and just when you think he's going, he's coming back. So who knows what's going to happen with Brock, or how long he'll be there. But as long as he's there, I'm going to enjoy him beating the holy hell out of Kofi Kingston, and hopefully, more important than anything I've just said, taking the WWE Championship away from Kofi Kingston and back to where it belongs, in the world of relevancy. That's where it belongs, because it has been in the world of Abyss, in the shadows of SmackDown Live for the better part of 4 months. 5 months. Can I do the math? Almost 6 months. It has been with a substandard, subpar, boring, and just I don't want to say the word undeserving, but he doesn't fit as champion, particularly WWE champion. A belt that is, the lineage goes back decades and decades and decades. So it'll be nice if Brock Lesnar does indeed take that belt off of Kofi Kingston. The feel-good story of 2019 that I tried to force myself to love. I tried. I really made an effort. And I was behind Kofi in the chamber. That I will absolutely admit. It gave me the feels. But even at WrestleMania, when he finally climbed that mountain, it still didn't feel right. It still didn't feel right. Even after he had climbed that mountain and Vince put all those obstacles in front of him, it was just not right. So, look, again, love Kofi, just doesn't belong. Doesn't belong in the WWE Championship picture. That's all there is to it. And the whole deal about him with the pancakes, I need to stop there. I feel myself going down a very dark road right now, and I don't need to feel that. I don't want to. And so anyway, but as far as Brock back, I loved it. I loved the fact that he put Kofi Kingston down so quickly. That was beautiful. And of course, Paul Heyman, who is nothing short of brilliant every time he comes out on the mic, more often than not. He's had some clunkers, but more often than not, this guy has been gold and has been a peanut butter and jelly pairing with Brock since day one. So for the first time ever, though, the news coming out of this whole deal is Brock Lesnar, for the first time in 15 years, competing on SmackDown Live, on the debut episode of SmackDown Live, October 4th, when they moved to Fox. So I had a feeling Brock was going to be his next opponent. I didn't think they'd bring him out this soon, and it would be after Hell in a Cell. But Brock's here. Fox is around the corner. And WWE is doing everything they can to get a leg up on AEW. Whether you think of them as true competition or not, they are still actually competition by definition. So I was a fan of the whole segment. I like the fact Brock is going to be going to SmackDown Live. I think it is a perfect change of pace for Brock, for the company, and for Kofi. Now, what I'm not considering here, and I probably should, is Kofi Kingston could overcome Brock Lesnar. And for my own health and my own state of mind, I am saying some small prayers that we don't see what happened to Brock Lesnar, or happened to Randy Orton at Clash of Champions, happened to Brock Lesnar on the first episode of SmackDown Live, debuting on Fox, and have Kofi Kingston just beat Brock Lesnar outright. I will tell you this. If that happens, I'm giving you all a warning right now. If Brock Lesnar is defeated soundly and convincingly by Kofi Kingston, and Byron Saxton has, you know, I don't know, 7 orgasms while he's commentating the match, and, you know, loses his mind when Kofi defeats Brock, I will immediately label my following episode of this show as explicit. This show is never explicit. Yes, I say the occasional mild cuss words, and so do my co-hosts and guests. But I lay off a lot of the bombs because I just think it's, number one, it's usually not very classy, and it's very easy to do, and I don't think it's in alignment with WWE's product. And their audience is PG. So why wouldn't I follow suit? But I will tell you this. I will break code. I will break the code of this podcast if Brock Lesnar is defeated soundly by Kofi Kingston October 4th. Just giving y'all a heads up. I don't want to do it, but I will be forced to do it. So, put as that one viral video went out, I thought it was like 10 years ago, hide your kids, hide your wife. All right? I'm not going to say the rest of it because it's not applicable. But hide your kids, hide your wife. Because it's going to be a brutal show. So, what do they do? Does Brock become champion? You know my take, what I want. But what does WWE want? What do the fans want? I think at this point, the fans have gotten their, even the ones that have been in full support of Kofi Kingston since the very first day that he won the championship back in April, that they would feel satisfied at saying, hey, Kofi got a really good run. We understand he can't hold it forever. I'm okay with Brock Lesnar taking the belt. It's believable. Brock Lesnar is the biggest threat to his championship since he became champion. I don't think there's a bigger threat on the roster than Brock Lesnar coming after your championship. So, again, I think fans would be okay with it. It's as if you're sitting down for a meal and you got your fill. I think most have gotten their fill and wouldn't be outraged and lose their minds over Kofi Kingston losing and dropping the belt. Now, someone say, oh my God, Brock Lesnar's going to take the belt and go and run and hide. You know what? I would take that. I would take absent Brock Lesnar, the absentee WWE champion, over Kofi Kingston, the pancake-throwing mid-card guy that still feels like he belongs in the mid-card, comes out and plays to the kids and smiles, laughs, throws pancakes, has unicorns, and tells stupid inside jokes no matter what happens in his storyline. I would take Brock Lesnar over that. Over that any day. Brock Lesnar is a guy that is legitimate. It would feel special when he's there. I would be fine with it. I'm a bit fearful, though. I'm a bit fearful that Brock Lesnar is actually being used as a prop. As a guy that is there to legitimize Kofi Kingston even further. Cement him even further. I'm very fearful of that. But many of you are probably out there going, oh, that's great. Now, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? That'd be awesome. That would really cement his legacy. But would it? Or would it be looked at as heavy-handed and unbelievable? Not unbelievable in a good way. Unbelievable in as such as this doesn't make sense. That Kofi Kingston, a guy that was in obscurity in the mid-card for 11 years, comes out and is unbeatable and hasn't lost a match since WrestleMania. That would be a tragedy. It'd be a tragedy. But, well, moving down the line to some other items from SmackDown Live. Baron Corbin has got his inauguration as the king. And it was what you thought it was. You know, you had the heel come out. Again, this tournament is designed for a heel. This tournament is designed for heels to use as a platform to brag. And that's what Baron Corbin did. So, kind of standard business there. And then calls out Chad Gable. And Chad Gable comes out. And lo and behold, we have the short jokes continuing. Why? Why? Why are we continuing to see and hear this sophomore garbage of the... I mean, I wouldn't mind... Look, I would understand if this was something that was mentioned in passing by one of his opponents on a random night, but it's a theme. It's a theme that is being said by Shane, by Baron Corbin, forgive me for his other opponents. Even Shelton Benjamin, I think, mentioned it. It's something that every heel now says. So would you have said the same thing about Daniel Bryan? Daniel Bryan's about the same size as Chad Gable. I mean, there are just certain guys that Chad Gable actually eclipses. What are you going to say the same thing about Cedric Alexander? Are you going to say the same thing about the entire 205 Live roster? Are you going to say the same thing about 25-30% of the guys on NXT? This is a different era, folks. This is a different era. And I'm not talking about a different era in society where people are super sensitive about shaming and judging and labeling people. All that nonsensical BS. That stuff I'm not a fan of. I think in general, just a quick side note in society, that people hide behind their identity and claim they're a victim for everything that ever happened to them rather than taking responsibility for their own effing choices. But that's neither here nor there. How about that for a little bit of politics for you on the WWE podcast? But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the fact that this is a new era in WWE. It has been for some time. This is no longer a big man territory. This is an era of guys that are smaller but are much more athletic. Chad Gable fits the bill perfectly. He is the embodiment of the ushering in of a new wrestler, a new idea of what a wrestler is in 2019. So if you're shaming, if the short jokes apply to Chad Gable, well, then they should apply to dozens and dozens of others on the roster. And so you may ask, well, why are they doing it? Well, number one, I think they feel it's heel heat to pick on somebody for their size, which is something you do in high school, if not middle school, if not elementary school. So I think that it's a way to get the fans behind him because, oh, well, he looks like the common man. So I can relate to that. I don't like that he's being picked on. Stand up for yourself, Chad. I think ultimately at a very, very simplistic level, that's the thinking and logic behind this whole thing. And number two, it is just Vince McMahon in his never-ending quest to have his top guys and performers that he has on television be what he just can't get out of his head, and that is a 6'5", 250-pound muscle meathead. That is what Vince McMahon's wet dream is. Let's face it. At this stage in his game, at his age, you think that all of a sudden, just because the crowd's cheering for these smaller guys that are putting on better matches, that he's going to also change his mind? So when he can get in his jabs and show what he still believes, he's going to do it. That has the fingerprints of Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn all over it. And it's stupid, and it's childish, and it's lowbrow, and it doesn't do anything, especially when every single heel says it every single time. He sees it every time. It's just a running theme that is just what they do with Chad Gable now. And it's stupid. And look, I'm 5'7". I'm not being biased here. I'm not the tallest guy in the world. Okay? But if someone called me short, I would ask how old they are, number one. And you have guys who are doing this in a professional sports environment on national television, trying to belittle Chad in an extremely unoriginal way, who is one of the best performers on the roster and could really excel to as high as he wants to, or really as high as Vince McMahon gets. And then he realizes, wait a minute, I have a guy that looks like he's 14 years old and, you know, people are cheering for this guy? Why? That doesn't make any sense. When they can cheer for Roman Reigns. That is Vince McMahon's voice in my head. That is just the voice. It's such a disconnect for me when they do that kind of stuff. Maybe I'm going way off into the weeds in here, but it's something that it continues to happen every single week. Every week we're hearing it. So I'm going to continue to talk about it. But it looks like Baron Corbin and Chad Gable are continuing their feud here, and I'm fine with that. They put on a very, very good finals match. Chad can have a good match with anybody, and Corbin is no slouch himself. Like, Corbin is more talented than I think people give him credit for. I'm totally fine with Corbin winning. He would have been my second choice. I'm totally fine with this program continuing. I don't know where the King of the Ring winner goes here. You know, as I said last night, the King of the Ring winner needs to go somewhere and needs to do something with this because WWE made a big deal out of it. And Chad Gable destroyed all of the props that go with the King of the Ring. And boy, have you ever seen party warehouse props like that? I mean, for a company that spends the money they do on championship belts and pyro back in the day and sets and advertising, all of that, they certainly didn't spare any expense, or did spare expense, I guess is the better phrase. They certainly spared expense when it came to the King of the Ring attire and props. They folded like a cheap suit on Baron Corbin, and I understand the visual. It was supposed to be destroyed. So if all of that was legitimate, you would have never been had Chad Gable be able to destroy those things. So I understand the visual, but it just looked cheap. So I'm not going to disparage the segment. I think it was good, and it certainly is a program that I'm fine with. I'm totally fine with Baron Corbin and Chad Gable. Chad Gable, it keeps him more relevant than he normally would have been had he just gone and just hid himself in 205 Live, or, you know, occasionally pop up in a tag match or as a, you know, a jobber for somebody else that's on the ascent. I'm fine with it. I love it. Continue to ascend Chad. And the one more thing I'll say about this, and then we'll move on, is that Chad Gable's a guy that you don't get super excited about seeing when he first comes out or when he first pops on the screen. He doesn't make you immediately, like, you know, lose your mind like The Rock or Stone Cold or really anyone that's over, right? But he's a guy that has the innate ability to bring you into a match and tell his story in a match. So while he doesn't get a whole lot of mic time, although he's not terrible on the mic, he's able to bring you into his soul and his story as he's competing and performing in the ring. That is a recipe for success. That is not something that all talent have. Even at this high of a level of their profession, not every talent has that ability to say so little, yet fans feel so much, and have the talking be done in the ring. It's a perfect example of what, and it's an embodiment of what this sport should be. It should be less talk, more action in the ring to non-verbally do the talking for you. So Chad just brings you in, man. He just brings you in. So I'm loving it. Let's continue moving it. And you know what? Maybe I'm a little biased, right? I don't know. Well, I don't know. But moving on here to Sasha Banks and her segment on SmackDown Live. I'm not really, you know, I don't know. I don't feel super strongly about this one way or the other. You know, we had Charlotte versus Sasha here, and Bayley was at ringside, and Charlotte controlled the opening of the match. Eventually, Charlotte put Sasha in the figure four, and then Bayley hit the ring to attack Charlotte, causing a disqualification and Charlotte to win. And then Sasha and Bayley beat down Charlotte until Carmella comes out to make the save. Did I miss something? And then Carmella kicks Sasha down, and then Charlotte hits a big boot on Bayley. What? I don't know. I don't think this is good or bad. I don't know what to make of it yet. There's got to be something here. I'm fine with them adding new blood to the Four Horsewomen feud, although I think they're doing pretty good right now. I just don't know I don't know how I feel about Carmella. I don't. Maybe they didn't have Becky there, or couldn't get her there, or didn't want her there, and just wanted to insert somebody else, and that somebody else was somebody who doesn't have anything going on other than being R-Truth's getaway vehicle. and for the 24/7 championship. So, look, I'm fine with it. I guess I just don't know what they're doing with. I don't know what they're doing with Carmella, but whatever. So this feud is continuing with Charlotte and Sasha and Bayley, who, as I said, needs to make a slow descent into darkness, and it looks like she's headed that way. It looks like she is indeed headed into the land of evil, and that's fine. That's fine. It looks like the Bayley buddies have finally been killed off, maybe one by one. They have been stabbed in their proverbial, air-filled hearts, and we still have the terrible I shouldn't say terrible intro music. We still have her entrance music that is her babyface character, which I hate. And she still has the side ponytail that I want to shave off in her sleep. So that maybe will suddenly go away or slowly transition. It's akin to, if you have seen Breaking Bad, Walter White is evolved from the antagonist to the protagonist, and evolves into the antagonist from season 1 to season 5. It's a slow descent into darkness. And maybe that's what they're going for here. I don't know. Maybe they just don't know what to do with Bayley. But Bayley was dangerously close to obscurity and in gray land of, well, I don't, you kind of turned heel, but you're not really doing anything to get me angry other than aligning yourself with Sasha. And you're the delusional baby face that says you're a hero for my kids, yet you're aligned with Sasha, and then you attack Becky, and then I don't know what to make. And then she made another step towards the right direction of heel by doing what she did at Clash of Champions in getting a cheap win and running her ass off out of the building. Perfect. And then you had her interfere in a match on behalf of Sasha to cause a disqualification. Another good sign. So if it's baby steps for Bayley into the slow descent into, hell, fine. Fine. I think it's good. I'm all about slow burns, and if that's where they're headed, good. But I just don't want Bayley to be the tweener. Tweeners go nowhere really quick. All right. A couple of items here from SmackDown Live. The Kevin Owens deal. Kevin Owens appears in the audience, has a ticket. And before we're shown Kevin Owens on camera, Shane McMahon was served papers backstage. And we don't know what they're for. If you watch wrestling, you probably know that they're from Kevin Owens in some capacity. And Kevin Owens, we learn, is filing a wrongful termination suit against Shane McMahon for $25 million. And I think that is a way to get Kevin Owens back on track. He's not begging for his job back or joining the Shane McMahon Kiss My Ass Club. That's a plus. But whenever WWE turns to legal issues, sometimes it can go sour because this is not a court of law. You don't want to overwhelm people with legalese. You need to make it stupid simple at times. So they kind of did that, and saying that basically Kevin Owens is suing Shane McMahon for everything he's got. And I guess more interestingly, Kevin Owens said that he will, if he wins, he will be the one to tell Shane McMahon he's fired. So I don't know how this is all going to pan out. I don't exactly know the ins and outs of this. My thinking is, since this is a pro wrestling environment and not Judge Judy, that it's going to end in some way through the vehicle of Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell, they will probably have a match in which the terms and conditions of that contract will be determined or enforced or dropped. And if Kevin Owens wins, then in some way Shane McMahon is gone. But he can't be fired because that wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But if Shane McMahon wins, Kevin Owens stays fired. Something to that effect. Of course, I don't have the specifics correct, I'm sure. But it's in some capacity going to come to a head at Hell in a Cell. It just has to. I mean, this is pro wrestling. Can't end in the actual courtroom. Please. Please don't. But overall, I think this was a step in the right direction from Kevin Owens, from where he was. Certainly from where he was. In the land of just nowhere, unfortunately. And they turned Kevin Owens babyface. He was doing well for a while. You know, using the stunner. Certainly a crowd favorite. And then he just gets hit with this $100,000 fine that completely derailed his entire character and just sunk him quick. And now they're trying to pull him out of that well. And they are slowly but surely, I think, heading the right way. It was a step in the right direction. I will leave it at that. A step in the right direction. And from the crowd reaction I could gauge, I would say that the those in attendance probably agree with me. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see what the whole payoff is of this. So, another big ticket item from SmackDown Live was Heavy Machinery winning. Nope, it was not. I'm joking. Heavy Machinery did beat Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, though, after the compactor. I mean, Heavy Machinery just continues to win, and that's fine. I don't need them going for a tag team title run right now. I don't need that. They need to just kind of do what they're doing. And I know that these matches seem irrelevant. And on the surface, they're the popcorn bathroom break matches. That's just what they are right now. But that's fine. That's okay. Heavy Machinery is on TV, which means they're in the eyes of fans, which means that they know who they are. They're getting exposure. They're getting, and also Heavy Machinery is getting in-ring experience. And they're realizing how to gauge live audiences. Honing their craft. There's nothing like performing in front of a live audience. So I think it's fine. I really, as much as these are bathroom break matches, this is just the evolution of talent. So the other, again, the other big ticket item was that we were told that Daniel Bryan tonight, last night, would be addressing the WWE Universe. So he comes out. And he heard people chanting his name. And I think people are ready to cheer Daniel Bryan again. That's just me. But Daniel Bryan said that those people that are cheering me right now are also the people that were accusing me of attacking Roman Reigns. And by the way, if you're a heel, it's a requirement that you call the audience you people. That's just what you do. And if you're a babyface that wins or excuse me, loses a match, it's a gutsy performance, according to Michael Cole. And everything that anyone ever does is a statement. So I'd love the over-unders on the word statement, on the word gutsy. I'd love an over-under on those words every single Monday night. I really would. I'm serious. There should be an over-under on it. It's just such a... It's the corporate buzzwords right now. Okay. So we have Daniel Bryan coming out. Again, he runs down the audience, but not really. He addresses the fact he's being cheered, but tells people that you're also the same ones that told me I was involved in Roman Reigns, and that he never lies. Rowan comes out and takes issue with how Bryan treated him, and he says he never asked what Rowan thought or for Rowan's input. Bryan says if Rowan doesn't like it, why doesn't Rowan do something about it? And then Luke Harper attacks Bryan from behind and beats him down. Roman Reigns came out to a very positive reaction. And eventually, Harper and Rowan overpower Reigns, put him down, and also pull up the matting on the floor and throw security guards on the concrete floor and hit Roman Reigns with a section of a barrier. And then once again, put Daniel Bryan through the table, double power slamming him through the announce table. So I think it's a good way to end the show. I'm still torn on whether I'm getting tired of seeing Rowan and Harper together. Right? They were in the Wyatt family. Then they disbanded. Then they got back together. Then there were the Bludgeon Brothers. And then Luke Harper got hurt. And then Eric Rowan kind of went away, and he became tag team champion. Camp champions. I'll get my words right. It's late, guys. I'm very tired. And then we have Bryan and Rowan split because Rowan... We finally got an explanation, by the way. Rowan said that he just wanted to prove that Roman Reigns is not Not the big dog, essentially, that he's vulnerable. He wanted to expose Roman Reigns. Okay, fine. We got something. I've been bitching for weeks that we have never gotten a motive, which was just stupid. And we got one. It's lame, but it's something, and I will applaud them for that. So I'm done complaining. So then we get, Rowan and Daniel Bryan split. Rowan attacks Bryan, which makes Bryan the face and sympathetic, especially when he gets double teamed. And Rowan says that no one can control him. He's nobody's puppet anymore. So Rowan and Harper stand tall. I don't know. I really hope they don't go back to Bludgeon Brothers as their names. I just don't want that. Maybe it's just Harper and Rowan. I don't need necessarily a name for these two right now. Harper and Rowan, that just sounds like a name of a team anyway. I'm fine with it. Those names go synonymously together. It'd be nice if we heard from Luke Harper. I would like to hear his motives for why he did what he did. We haven't heard that yet, and it would be nice to hear it. So I'm a big Luke Harper fan. The guy has a really good presence. Obviously, his eyes. We all know about his eyes. I mean, his eyes were in his entrance video at one point. His eyes just have that lights on, nobody home look. Just that psychotic look. It's just great in terms of that. And that's a big deal. I know it's just a small trait, but it's a big deal. And he's good in the ring. And he certainly looks like he's gotten in shape or is in ring shape right now to be on SmackDown Live. And I'm ready for him to get into a program, hopefully by himself. And he doesn't just necessarily become only part of a team. And I'm ready for a Luke Harper's run. But again, I need a motive from Luke Harper, why he did what he did, why he's back, what his goals are. We just need mission statements. That's all. So we'll have to see if we get it. But overall, guys, I enjoyed SmackDown Live. I really did. Nothing more pleasing than seeing Kofi Kingston again get put right on his ass, and Charlotte Flair, who continues her program with Sasha Banks. Ali versus Shinsuke Nakamura in a non-title match. Sami Zayn introduced Nakamura and cut a promo before the match. And Sami said he likes Ali and thinks he's super athletic, but one thing he's not and will never be is champion. And so this really wasn't a match, as Sami tackled Ali and then Nakamura knees him in the head and throws Ali in the corner and gives him the Kinshasa. So I'm growing to like Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura week by week more and more. I just am. I think that these two seem to somehow blend together very well. It's only been a few weeks, I understand, but so far so good. I think that this could be something, and I think they need each other at this point, where they've been floating in and out of programs, and Shinsuke has been just bottomed out from where he began in WWE. So, the New Day versus Revival and Randy Orton. The New Day won this after Woods hit a flying elbow drop on Wilder and Kofi hits the Trouble in Paradise on Dawson for the three count. Again, Kofi Kingston is just absolutely impenetrable right now. He is Superman with bullets being fired at him. I mean, that's just who and what he is, and y'all know how I feel about that. But the New Day won the match. The Revival, Randy Orton, I also love that as a team. I think that they go well together. It's a little bit akin to when he was with Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes. It feels a little bit like that. And this could be something. This could be something. And one last little thing I'd like to toss out to you guys as a thought. Do you think that Daniel Bryan is still behind this? Now, you may say I'm crazy. Oh, they've attacked him. Oh, no. But think about Daniel Bryan being the leader of Harper and Rowan. I know that Rowan said he's the leader, but Daniel Bryan is the figurehead, the ringleader, if you will, of that stable. Just think about that. I mean, maybe you could pull that off. But I mean, I would lean towards no, based on how many times that Luke Harper or Eric Rowan has attacked Daniel Bryan, that it would be kind of strange to have him suddenly join them. But, you know, crazier things have happened. Crazier things have happened. And it just seems like a perfect fit for Daniel Bryan to be that guy, to come in and to fool the world and join that pairing. But we'll see. All right, guys. Well, that's really my thoughts for SmackDown Live. Tomorrow I'll be back. I'll be back with Ashley Mann, our co-host, And we'll be talking about everything in WWE, which is a hell of a lot of things to discuss. I'm really excited to be talking with her this week. And also, fingers crossed, the NXT podcast returns this week for your listening pleasure. So also, again, this is on video right now. I am recording this show as we speak, so you can head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast if you'd like a viewing of this show and an audio version of this show. So lots of ways to enjoy this show, and you can check out the website at wwepodcast.com and on Twitter at the WWE podcast. So tons of ways to get in touch. There's also email, realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So that's still a thing. Email still is around. And for those tech geeks out there, iPhone 11 release day, iPhone 11 Pro release day is Friday. iOS 13 is tomorrow. Yeah, I know. Some of you are like, huh? F Apple. I'm a Google dude. Okay, well, fine. But, you know, Apple's still got some fans out there, that's for sure, making billions of dollars. So I'm one of those idiots that refreshes their phone every single year and overpays for it and knows I overpaid for it, and I don't give a damn. How about that? I am a self-aware fool for Apple, and I don't give a damn. Okay. All right. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. As always, I'll talk to you next time.